south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Now, just lately, I've been getting a lot of emails from people asking me about using Visa and MasterCard, etc., down here in Latin America. And I know I spoke a lot about that on a previous show. However, now, some of these emails are asking me if there's a way to be anonymous in using a Visa or MasterCard. Bottom line, is there a way to use a debit or a credit card so that the U.S. government and the IRS and the NSA doesn't know every little move you've made by tracking your purchases? Well, as I said before, if you come down here to Latin America and you open up a Sociedad Anónima, which is a local corporation, that corporation can open a bank account, and your bank account we'll get you a debit or credit card, and you can be the signatory on that card. And guess what? Unless there's a court order from the Latin country your bank is located in, no one's going to get a hold of that information. And by the way, court orders like that are notoriously difficult to get down here in civil cases. So that's one of the cool things about having an SA corporation. However, you know, it does take some money to open an SA corporation, maybe $1,500 to $2,000 one-time startup fee. Then there's a yearly maintenance fee to keep up the tax records and the legal work in the country where you select to have your SA corporation, and that'll cost maybe $500 to $1,500 a year depending on the country. So you're looking at a $50 to $100 a month maintenance fee forever or until you close the corporation. And besides that, it could take some weeks or a month or two to set up that corporation. And what if you're in a hurry? What if you're traveling down to Latin America for whatever reason and you want to kind of stay off the radar? Well, here's option two, and it's a very, very good option. You get yourself what's called a Union Pay card, either a debit or a credit card. And they've got a gold card and a platinum card and all that. So have you heard of that yet? Well, if you haven't, that's because it's a credit card that came out of China and has only in the last few years become worldwide. And in fact, this Union Pay card business is bigger than Visa and MasterCard. So if you're traveling in Latin America or elsewhere in the world and you go up to an ATM machine and you see a little Union Pay logo, that means you can use that card in an ATM machine to draw out the local funny money from whatever country you're in or US dollar funny money. And if you think this Union Pay card is just kind of a weak also run, forget about it. They're accepted now in 135 different countries and all over the place down here in Latin America. So, in effect, if you're in Latin America or anywhere else and you walk into a restaurant, let's say, and you see the usual suspects, the Visa, MasterCard, American Express on the window or the door, and you see that Union Pay logo too, you'll know what that's all about. Now, you'll see no Chinese or Mandarin writing on that logo. It'll look like a typical American English kind of slogan. So, that's probably why you didn't realize it's come out of China. But here's the real cool thing about it. If you get one of these cards, debit or credit or otherwise, you are in effect completely out of the U.S. First World Banking and Customer Tracking System. So you're not tied in with Big Brother like you are with Visa and MasterCard. Bottom line, if you have one of these cards, you're pretty damn anonymous. So then you might ask, how secure are these Union Pay cards? And once you set up one of these Union Pay accounts, how safe is your money once deposited there to use, for example, as a source of funds for your debit card? Well, let me give you some facts here that show just how stable this card system is. Now, recently, from Bloomberg Business Week, it says, the Union Pay card system is so strong financially that there are over 2.9 billion cards in circulation, equal to over 45% of all the world's issued credit cards. And then it says, now accepted in over 135 countries, Union Pay is now the number one credit card by volume and numbers in the world, surpassing formerly number one Visa card in 2013. So then you might ask, how do I go about getting one of these cards? You just go to their website, Union Pay International, and you'll see you can apply right there online to any one of 100 banks. And hallelujah, none of them first world US or European banks. all of them located in Asian countries. And you'll see four of them are in the Philippines, seven in South Korea, two in Cambodia, five in Japan, four in Thailand, 15 in Hong Kong, three in Singapore, etc., etc. They've even got four banks you can apply to in Vietnam. So then, according to the FATCA and FinCEN laws, are they going to report back to the U.S. IRS that you got a bank account in a foreign country? Why, sure they will. But there'll be absolutely no tracking of where and when and how much you're using that card. I'm sure all you expat wannabes, gonna-bes, and regular old expats can see the possibilities of using this card. So again, look it up. Go to the website UnionPay International. It's all in English. I know some expats that are using it already. They love it. And believe me, practically every place that takes Visa and MasterCard down here in Latin America is now taking this credit card. And of course, ATMs too. So as Expat Eddie says, why not give the Flying Middle Finger Award to Visa and MasterCard? They deserve it. Oh, and one more thing. If you go to their website and you click on the bottom of the page where it says Instructions for Using Your Card Overseas, well, at first glance, you got to wonder what they mean by overseas because all of these cards are issued in Asia. So for us, everything's overseas, right? Anyway, that's where you can get a list of countries and regions that accept that card. And there's a massive list of all the ATM machine locations too. And also note on this page, you'll see the currency conversion rates are between 1% and 2%. And that info is for if you're switching between currencies or you're buying things that are not in the original currency that you loaded your account with. Anyway, check it out. It's a backdoor credit card play and you'll be impressed. Okay, now let's change gears a bit. If you recall, in many shows, I've mentioned how macho the Latin society really is, and you won't really know how macho it is until you actually end up meeting and getting to know some of your neighbors. Now, with my first world gringo style viewpoint on things, including machoism, I've often wondered how Latin men and women really feel about that subject, because although you do see and hear people hit on that subject occasionally in op-ed pieces in the paper and stuff, it's a very tiny contingent of so-called radical feminists who are journalists that bother to talk about it, but since it's so entrenched, no one really pays attention. And by the way, it's not us gringos calling these ladies radical feminists, it's Latin men that call them that. Because, you see, compared to radical feminists up in the first world, these ladies are nothing but powder puffs. So, it's a subject that you hear almost no one ever talking about at home or in casual conversation anywhere with any of the classes, except occasionally you'll hear some woman mention that a guy's machista, but that's about as far as it goes. And believe me, when a Latin woman says that about a man, the guy has to have been extreme and way over the top. Anyway, staying with that subject, here's a little brain teaser for you. Allow me to read for you right now an excerpt out of the autobiography of one of the most famous Latin American emigres to the U.S. And after I read this, I want you to try to guess who this guy is. And here's something he had to say about his grandfather, who in the old country, a Latin country, was an upper middle class doctor. And here's what this very famous Latin guy had to say about his grandpa. He says, quote, "My grandfather, Don Desiderio, and Grandma Rosita had seven children. When Grandpa died, he'd been retired for quite a while from being a doctor and had just spent most of his time at a little farm in El Cane, just outside Santiago, what he called his casa chica, meaning little house in English. This is where his mistress lived with his other seven or eight children. And whenever he heard that Grandma Rosita was coming down the road, he said, 'Everybody out.' And they'd hide in the barn until my legitimate grandma left." Then he goes on to say, "I'm sure grandma must have known, but she never said a word, and the mistress never got upset about having to get out and hide occasionally. As long as my grandpa continued to love each of them and had cared for all his children equally, everyone was satisfied." Now, the fact is, having two houses and two sets of children was very, very common among Latin men of means. And Latin women understood this and didn't make a fuss about it. Then he cites an article in the Los Angeles Times by David F. Belknap, Dateline Santiago, Chile, October 1973, back in the bad old days when there was a military junta and there was a curfew set because a lot of people were disappearing. And he starts this Los Angeles Times article by quoting, "Chile's new curfew is actually a boon for family life. It's done more for marital fidelity in Chile in 1 month than 6 months of hardcore evangelicism ever could. That curfew, by the way, inadvertently cut way, way down on the time a man could spend at his little casa chica, the house with the secret or not so secret mistress and the other kids. So that little house with the mistress that a man would visit 3 or 4 times a week, the curfew mostly put an end to that." So then our mystery writer comments about this LA Times article by saying, quote, "Curfew aside, frankly, the custom of my grandfather's day is still going hard and strong in Latin America. It's not, however, a way of life that you can easily or safely carry into this country, the USA. Too bad American girls do not seem to understand it." Boy, and it's me again. Is that an understatement or what? Okay, now let's listen to what he says about Latin teenage boys. He goes on by saying, "My uncle Salvador, I'm sure under the instructions from my father, took me to Casa Marina. I was then 15 years old, the dangerous age, when you're no longer a child but still have quite a way to go before being considered a man. Now, the Casa Marina was the finest whorehouse in Santiago, and there I learned the whole deal. Ladies of that house were all young and clean and treated me very kindly, very nicely, very tenderly, and very expertly. Sometimes I wonder perhaps if it's not better to educate a young boy just like that instead of letting him get into a lot of trouble trying to find this stuff out for himself." Then he says, "If your father or mother or a close relative, as it was in my case, was willing to guide you and help you with this first inevitable and major problem of your teens, you would not be afraid or ashamed to go to him or her later for advice or with other problems." Okay, so there you have it, a real slice of Latin life from the upper middle class. And again, I'm not going to tell you who wrote that. You're going to have to guess for yourself. So if you think you've got the answer, send me an email to theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And, you know, my comment on that passage, as always, is, ladies, gringas, when you come down here, don't ever think you're going to change these guys. It's a way of life firmly embedded in society. So there you have it from the horse's mouth. A snapshot of Latin men in the upper, middle, and wealthy classes. Now, as for the middle and lower classes, the difference there is that these men have their mistresses and second families and such, but they don't support that second home. They could never afford to. Anyway, I'll tell you who that Latin author is on the next show. But first, here's another hint. I'll read another passage from this book that's going to blow your mind, this time in a completely different way. He starts out this section of the book by saying, "My grandfather on my mother's side of the family, Alberto, was best friends and partners with a guy named Emilio. Now, Emilio, my grandfather's best friend, was a lover of good wine. He did not like the dark and heavy rum of Jamaica. So, with a small still and equipment in a little back shed that he built, he began experimenting with different mixtures of rum until he came up with an excellent and light, very fine blend. Actually, he was looking for a scotch-type drink, a sipping kind of after-dinner booze, which he tested out on friends that came over to the house. After dinner, he always offered them a small glass of his new concoction. Now, soon everybody was raving about it, and guests started bringing empty Coca-Cola and beer bottles and filling up. One day, a French salesman, Enrique Chu, was at the house and he sampled the rum, of course. He immediately became enthusiastic and told Emilio to stop giving it away. He said, 'Your drink is unique, why not bottle it?' And it was done. As it turned out, the Frenchman became the business manager of the new rum company and financier. Emilio made the rum and my grandfather Alberto, who owned the 2 delivery mules, became the delivery and sales department. At first, he would load the mules with as many bottles of rum as he could fit in the cardboard boxes and sell them in Santiago and the nearby countryside. When he died, My grandfather was vice president of the Bacardi Rum Corporation. Okay, so there's your hint. But note, this Latin guy who wrote his autobiography, his name was not Bacardi. That was just his grandfather's partner. So while we're on the topic of macho Latin men, this is a good time to talk about that tragic incident that happened with that Honduran beauty queen. I'm sure you heard the sound bites up in the first world. You heard, of course, that the new Miss Honduras was brutally murdered along with her sister after a night at the disco in Tegucigalpa. Now, all that stuff surely scares the crap out of any gringo thinking that they might come down to Latin America and hang out in Honduras or perhaps anywhere in Latin America. So, what about it? You're thinking a girl like that, Miss Honduras, who should be the pride of her country, gets blown away by some jealous boyfriend or whatever? Not to mention, what was it, 6 months ago now? A former Miss Venezuela, who should also be the pride of her country, and her husband were blown away in another senseless robbery turned bad. You remember I spoke about that on a past show. Anyway, I'd like to mention a few things now that I'm sure you didn't know about this Miss Honduran case. The fact is, you see, I'm in and out of Honduras all the time, and I know intimately what it's like there, so what you'll hear from me are not gruesome little sound bites, but the real story that few people up north know, and here it is. Actually, what you probably heard was the two girls were found shot dead on a remote riverbank, and the police said the sister's boyfriend confessed to the killing because he was in a jealous rage over his girlfriend, Miss Honduras' older sister. She was 22. Anyway, she was caught red-handed dancing with, oh my God, another man. So, to right an embarrassing macho wrong, and to save his pride, her boyfriend just had to kill her. Now, that much of the story you might have heard. That said, first of all, people in Honduras are saying this is not a crime of passion, it's a crime of machismo. Now, here's the thing. The guy that killed these two girls, his name was Plutarco Ruiz. Like I said, he was Miss Honduras' older sister's boyfriend. Now, what the first world is not talking about is that this Ruiz guy was a very, very bad guy. And he always was. In fact, his brother was shot and killed this year too, gunned down in a restaurant in San Pedro Sula, Honduras. It's a city I know quite well, and sure, it has some very bad areas, but it has some very nice areas too, and if you're a smart gringo, you just stay in those nice areas. Anyway, Plutarco Ruiz's brother was gunned down with a bunch of guys carrying AK-47s, and what do you think that means? Narcos, of course. So then you should ask yourself, what's this nice 22-year-old girl, the older sister of Honduran beauty queen, a grade school teacher, no less, doing hanging around with narco guys? In fact, what you see down here occasionally are these big SUVs driving by, filled with uneducated, armed, tough-looking tattooed guys who are obviously narcos. They're easy to spot. They stick out like sore thumbs. However, they'll never bother you and me. Why would they? They're in their own little world, and we're not in it. We don't want to be. But the sad fact is, the girls here in Latin America, especially the ones from the lower middle classes, the poor girls, find these guys dangerously attractive. In fact, I can't tell you the number of times I've spoken to a beautiful young Latin girl who's told me that while occasionally walking down the street, every once in a while one of these big bad SUVs will pull up, the guy will roll down the window, ask for her name and number, try to make a date, and if she refuses, he'll hand her a business card and keep pushing until she gives in or just keeps walking on. That's just the way it goes down here when beautiful young Latin women have to take the chicken bus and walk around on their own, ones that can't afford a taxi or don't have their own car, which is like 95% of them. So think of it, with all these attractive young Latin girls walking around and guys pulling over and trying to hit on them, some of these beautiful young girls who are living in tin shacks on the edge of poverty give in to the temptation. They rationalize it, thinking these pompous jerks are an answer to get them out of the ghetto. Oh, and by the way, one beautiful Latin girl told me that there are two types of guys that'll pull up in their big SUVs. Narcos and, you guessed it, scumbag politicians on the make, naturally. Now, you have to know that no young Latin woman wants to take the chicken bus or walk down the street in a middle or lower middle class neighborhood. And remember, this is a society where you are what you drive and what you wear. So enough of these women think that they could handle these guys when they go on dates with them and such that they never realize that once they step into that car, they're entering a whole new dangerous world. And remember, these guys have the money to wine them and dine them like they've never seen before because, hell, they're living in tin shacks and, if they're lucky, working at McDonald's or clerking at a shoe store for $300 a month. A lot of, especially lower middle class Latin girls, look at these guys as a way to get some status and get the hell out of their neighborhood. Big mistake, because once you're in that group, they won't let you out. Now, the thing is, this particular Miss Honduras is a strange case because she comes from the lower middle classes, which is highly unusual. And what do I mean by that? Well, you should know that all the big beauty pageants, the Miss Universe, the Miss World, the Miss whatever country, they just don't put ads in the papers saying, if you're beautiful, come on down, we're having a casting. Nope, it's not like that at all. This is how it really works. Every big Latin American city has 3 or 4 or even 10 modeling agencies or modeling schools. And those 20 or 30 girls you see up on the stage in that Miss Colombia, Venezuela, or Paraguay pageant, they've all gone to one of those modeling schools for 6 months or so, and it cost real money for them. They had to buy particular outfits that were necessary for the pageant and swimsuits and pay for professional makeup jobs, etc. And lower middle class girls, even middle class girls, can't afford even the tuition for one of those modeling schools, which could be $2,000 or $3,000 plus all the dresses and accessories and the hairdos along the way. In fact, one of these girls told me that just to win a local, let's say, Miss Coffee Plantation pageant, it sets a girl back at least $500, buying the proper colored dresses and swimsuits and the hairdos and the makeup and the transportation and such. You have to pay for that. So, in effect, the modeling schools submit the candidates. It's not open casting. So, for example, a girl that wins the Miss Honduras title, she's won 8 or 9 much smaller pageants in the area to kind of build up her resume, and for every one of those, she dished out maybe $400 or $500. Middle-class and lower-middle-class families could never afford that. So then, how did this particular Miss Honduras, coming from a very poor family, and you could see that on television, because when they went to the house to interview her mother, man, that house was really low-class. Cold water flat, no windows, tin roof, you know the story. A real low-class dump. Not the kind of neighborhood I'd ever recommend a gringo walk through. So then, how did she beat those odds? How did she get in the big game coming from a poor family with no dough? Well, you see, on a rare occasion, a neighborhood or a tiny town that has a very beautiful girl in it will actually take up a collection within the local businesses and pitch in and pay for some of those expenses I was talking about. In other words, she'll have some grassroots local supporters who see that if she's a real special case, as she starts winning those little school pageants when she's very young, she'll pick up more local donations from hardware stores and 7-Elevens and such. That's how poor girls in rare cases make it to the big time. Now remember, a girl from a poor family like that is usually throwing her meager paycheck in with the family pot along with the brothers and sisters and mom and dad. So at least at first, she's not going to quit school or quit her job at McDonald's to take a frivolous 6-month beauty course that might cost a half year's salary for her dad. So like I said, this is the unusual case. I only know of one other girl who that's ever happened to. So anyway, these beautiful Latin girls you see in the Miss World and the Miss Universe pageants and such, they've all got parents who've dished out that kind of money, so they're almost always from the upper middle classes. And believe me, girls from the upper middle classes are not hanging around with narcos, guys with AK-47s and tattoos. Their parents own businesses and convenience stores and tire outlets, etc. And they're footing the bill for all those little extras it takes to win one of those beauty pageants. So most of these young girls have been winning local contests like that since age 14. They don't have to work. They don't have to worry where the money's coming from because daddy and mommy are footing the bill. However, in low-class neighborhoods, when a big black SUV drives through, everybody takes notice that that's the cool guy and that's the guy to emulate. Whereas in upscale areas where the upper-middle-class folks hang out, like high-end malls and health clubs, etc., when a big-ass SUV rolls in and a rough-looking bodyguard jumps out, they're looked down upon because they obviously don't fit in with the neighborhood or the class of people. For example, if one of these show-off, low-class gangster types pulls in with his bulletproof SUV to a Gold's Gym parking lot, walks in and tries to sign up for a membership, well, guess what? He'll stick out like a sore thumb and won't get any of the respect he's used to getting in a poor neighborhood. No one will be his friend, and no one will even give him the time of day. And upper-middle-class Latin women want nothing to do with a guy like that. In a situation like that, they're considered uncouth show-offs that no one will take seriously. And believe me, they feel that, so they do not tend to hang around in those areas. They stick to the poor areas where people suck up to them. You get what I mean? So to some poor girls, these guys are a way out. But really, it's jumping from the frying pan into the fire. Oh, and just one more thing about Miss Honduras's older sister, the one that got blown away first in that jealous rage. Before she was going out with the boyfriend that eventually killed her, she had another boyfriend who he himself was a narco who was shot and killed in 2013. So come on, don't believe this so-called tragedy is about random acts of violence. It's not. It's about random acts of stupidity on the part of these girls. And to add to their exceedingly bad judgment, there's more. This Plutarco guy that killed both these girls, his brother David, was another bad boy shot and killed last February. Again, proving that certain idiot women love bad boys. But there's more. Get this. This Reese guy, the guy that killed the girls, he was known to be accompanied by 6 bodyguards. Bottom line, this guy was the worst kind of macho dick you could imagine. And Miss Honduras and her sister, they were just stupid idiots who obviously were impressed by the bad boy image and culture. Still feeling sorry for those girls? You know that old saying, no matter how clean you are, if you play in the toilet, you're gonna get some crap on you. Bottom line, when you decide to come down to Latin America, you have to know the good, the bad, and the ugly neighborhoods. There are plenty of safe, good neighborhoods, by the way. And one of the best ways to get smart about that subject is to come down to my Expat Wisdom Seminar in January 2015. Go to expatwisdom.com, click on the seminar link for full details. You won't want to miss this one. By the way, on our boots on the ground portion, we will be checking out the good, the bad, and the ugly neighborhoods, and you'll get to see firsthand exactly what I've been talking about all these years on this show. So if you don't have a plan B and you want some unforgettable expat pointers and tips, come on down. I've still got a few spots left.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.